I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever amazing, ever spectacular Spider Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Secret Ball Stories, where I invite guests to count down a personal top five list in high fidelity fashion. And we've got a doozy for you today, and we've got a heck of a guest for you. It is your friend and mine, Angry Andrew Knowles, is back.
Hello!
welcome back to the show. I mean, we've recorded last week. We've done some videos for you, so it's all banter. It's all good. You know,
we've got to keep sane during this lockdown.
Got to do something to alleviate the boredom. And
yes, we do.
And speaking of lockdown, and speaking of things happening in the world, it's been a very strange year for politics, wouldn't you say, Andrew Knowles?
I would definitely agree.
There's been some good news and some bad news, both sides of the pond, I would say, in the Western world anyway, in regards
to good news.
I mean, yeah, fair point. Actually, It's all pretty bad when you come down to it with politics. And that is why me and Andy Knowles have teamed up once again to bring you our top five list of worst fictional politicians.
Yes. Strong emphasis on the fictional. We're not talking fictional about real politics.
Yeah, so we're not going to, you know, I don't like to be, this is probably the most political I'm ever probably going to get on the show, because I like to view politics through the lens of entertainment, through the lens of fiction. And I think this is one of those. And I think there's going to be maybe some political diatribe going on. Who knows? But we're just going to talk about bad politicians. You may not share our political views. Mine and Andy's political views are fairly similar, I think. And that's fine. But you will notice that a lot of these characters do tend to lean slightly to the right, if not all the way to the extreme right.
Yeah, it's an unavoidable trend in sort of like movie, especially evil politicians. Mm. They always seem to edge towards that right side, don't they? I mean, without looking at any particular stereotypes or anything, I guess it's just the way that it is.
I think mostly, history is a good example of other. I mean, on the other side of that argument, you know, you had like Hitler was from a socialist group. And was fairly left-leaning, but kind of came all the way round to the other side, went so far left, he went far right, sort of thing. Who knows? But
so far left, he went right.
So far right, he went left. Who knows? It's all confusing. It's politics. Political science gone mad.
But this is why we're looking at fictional movie,
yes,
comic book, yeah, and TV politics.
TV, books, you name it. We're going to look at fictional politicians because we're not the most politically versed, I don't think. You know, we have our opinions, but I don't think we are the people to talk politics. I don't think that's our expertise. But we do know fiction. We like comics. We like movies. We like TV. And I think this is perfect for us. So we're going to take a look at that. So we're not going to look at any fictional versions of real-life politicians as well, just to be clear. So, for example, Richard Nixon in The Watchmen will not be included in this list because he's real. Even though it's a fictional version, it's of a real person. Other examples you can pull out as well. But we are looking at fictional characters. Also, the positions, the political powers, power positions they hold can also be fictional as well. They might not have to.
Yes.
They might not necessarily be, you know, from this planet, from this universe. Who knows? You know, might be a fictional country like Genosha or something like that. Wakanda. Who knows? Whatever. We are gonna find out. So, Andy, as you are the guest, as always, there's been what was our last top five? Was it the robots?
Yeah, it was the robots, yeah.
I think it was the robots. That was a good one. Well, as usual, I want you to go first, and I want you to tell me what is your first worst fictional politician?
So I have gone for a bit of a fun one to start with, a little bit of a fun one. I've gone for President James Dale from Mars Attacks, played by the excellent Jack Nicholson. Basically, he's just an absolute moron. He tries to befriend the aliens even while they're completely destroying and massacring everyone. And he's always sort of like, no, we'll be friends. It's fine. We'll all be friends. And then he himself ends up getting, you know, vaporized. And it's utterly delightful. He's just a bumbling idiot, basically. He just makes all the wrong mistakes you can possibly imagine a president would make in a comedy alien invasion disaster movie. Yeah, it just, because it's played by Jack Nicholson as well, I think it's just absolutely perfect, because you're used to Jack Nicholson, you know, especially in like the film A Few Good Men, where he's like a very stoic, you know, knows exactly what he's doing, what he wants. And in this film, he's just an absolute disaster, an absolute mess. And I love it.
And it's kind of, it's a kind of a send up of those kind of 50s kind of atomic age kind of horror or sci-fi or kind of action movies that, you know, the president was always the man. He was always the guy. He would always get you through everything. This is, you know, pre-Watergate. You know, this is like, the president is all American. He is us. He'll save us. He'll save the day. But this guy is useless.
Yeah, he's in that war room pretty much the entirety of the film. It looks like the war room that's straight up lifted from Dr. Strangelove. And literally, he's just constantly staring at things and like, you know, what's going on? I don't know what to do, you know. Everybody's advising him. He's like, no, we'll just be friends. We'll just say it's fine.
And you expect like world leaders to have some, obviously they've got a lot of advisors, not going to go know everything, but they've got to have some kind of gumption and some determination. And just know what they're about, what they're doing and what the plan is. But this guy is a complete fool. And it kind of harkens back to like, oh, we come in peace. And he's almost like the opposite. It's like usually it's like the US military are attacking them even though they're coming in peace, like a Day the Earth Stood Still type thing. But it's kind of flipped on its head in this one where all the generals are still like, kill it. But the president's like, no, well, you know, this is a stepping stone to a grander universe, you know, a more United States of the universe, if you will. And turns out that the aliens are just mass murdering. You know, all that sort of stuff.
Even as they're destroying like massive landmarks and things like that, he's still like, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
He also plays that other character, doesn't he, Nicholson? He plays the kind of cowboy, like Las Vegas guy. I can't remember.
Yeah,
the kind of long-haired guy who's kind of a shuckster or a shyster. One of those dirty dealers.
It's a brilliant bit of casting by like Tim Burton and his team, you know, getting Jack Nicholson. Obviously, Jack Nicholson worked with Tim Burton previously on Batman. But it's a brilliant bit of casting, and you can see like the playful nature in it. I think that's why I rate it so highly, because you can see the playful nature in it.
And it's
literally like, you know, it's a finger pointing at like other bumbling presidents, you know, like even like Clinton and things like that at the time. The Simpsons does it perfectly with Clinton, you know, with alien invasions and things like that. You know, it's just the little bumbling nuances of like, oh, you can imagine Clinton doing this as well. Mm. You can imagine other presidents doing this, you know, in the past.
Yeah, you've definitely seen it before. What I like about it is it's not very Tim Burton as a film.
No, it's not. It's such a straight character as well. He's just a fool.
Yeah. It's not got any of the kind of gothic feel or vibe that Tim Burton has. It's still fucking weird. Like, it's a weird movie, but that's Tim Burton's kind of wheelhouse anyway. I love the design of the aliens. I like all the
They're very 50s, aren't they? The film is very 50s, but a lot of like the human characters, especially Nicholson, they are very much like present day. That juxtaposition between them, I think, is what sells the film.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of fun. It's very tongue in cheek, and I think was this after Independence Day or before Independence Day?
Ooh, that is a good question. Shall I have a quick sneaky look?
Go on. You have a cheeky delve on the web.
So it was out. It was out 13th of December 1996. Mars Attack. So Independence Day. Well, it was 1996 as well.
Oh.
But it was August. So Independence Day came first.
Right.
But obviously they were being filmed around about the same time. So
yeah. But I imagine this didn't necessarily do as well as Independence Day, probably, I think.
No, Independence Day was massive, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think this one is a bit of a cult hit. I think even with Tim Burton fans, I think this is a bit of one of the more culty of his kind of catalogue. I've got a very love-hate relationship with Tim Burton, a lot of his movies.
Yeah. I will actually go out on a limb and blame this film for the reason why Tim Burton became so narrow with his later films.
Yeah.
Obviously, this film didn't really take off probably as they imagined it would, so he retreated back into that gothic
safe.
Yeah, repetitive thing. I mean, you had Sleepy Hollow, which came out a little bit later, which is
that was brilliant.
Right. Love Sleepy Hollow. But again, that's kind of a shift in a way. It's not really a standard Tim Burton affair.
He's very hit and miss for me. Like, he'll hit hard and then he'll miss for me. So it's very, like, I love Batman Returns. I love Batman. Great.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, all the other stuff. But yeah, he's not one of my favourites, you know. And I would like him not to put Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp in everything as well. I would like him to work with other people.
Yeah. Got to a point where he's just like, they're both great, but come on.
Yeah. There's only so many English accents I can hear out of Johnny Depp without going, okay, all right, thank you again. Oh, God, yeah.
We know you love us, Johnny. Stop.
nothing against you, Johnny, but it works there, take it, you know what I mean? But fair enough. I think that was a really good choice. I like seeing, I've got one coming up. My number one is quite similar. But I won't reveal it just yet. But yeah,
because that would end the podcast.
Right, that's it, guys. Bye. No, we don't want any more out of you, Andy. Don't want any more out of me. Just a top two. Top two. That's all we get. Right. So I'm gonna go with quite. You had quite a light one, so I'm gonna bring it back. This is gonna get quite dark and serious now. Okay.
Dark and serious already.
Really dark and serious. So I wanted to, in my five, I've tried to pick different political positions as well. Like all of my five have a different political position in the power scheme. So I've tried to do that just to differentiate a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's start with a big one. Let's start with the President of the United States. So I'm going to go with Alan Richmond from Clint Eastwood's Absolute Power. So this is a... Yeah, it's a deep dive. So this is a political thriller. Now, let's be honest, you know, bad politicians and sex scandals go together like flies on shit.
Pretty
much. You can't kind of move for them. So in this film, director Clint Eastwood takes that to the absolute limit. So it's not just a sex scandal. So Clint Eastwood is playing a jewel thief called Luther. And he breaks into a house and basically hides behind this secret compartment, which has a two-way mirror. So he's hiding away. And the woman comes home and she comes home with a man, starts having sex, gets a little rough. Playfully rough, you know, if that's your thing. Then it gets a little bit rougher, then a little bit rougher, and then she goes, right, no, I don't like this. He carries on going, a fight ensues. They're punching each other, they're knocking each other down. Potentially she's about to be raped. She goes to stab the guy. Then two secret agents, secret service agents, come in and shoot her dead. The man in question is Gene Hackman's Alan Richmond, the President of the United States.
Wow.
Okay.
I have not seen this film.
I won't spoil it, but this is the opening, like, half an hour, this
part. Yeah.
So Clint Eastwood escapes. They know he's escaped. They're trying to cover this up. They're trying to cover the whole thing.
Yeah.
The Secret Service. They've made a mistake. They wanted to call the police, but the woman who's in charge is like, no, we've got to cover this up, stabbing and everything. We've got to cover it all up. Because the woman involved was was Gene Hackman's character's, Alan Richmond's kind of mentor. So helped him get to the presidency. So he's slept with his wife, tried to sleep with his wife, And then, you know, it started off consensual, then became very not consensual throughout. And then, yeah, so they cover this up. Luther manages to get away with a knife, so he has all the DNA evidence and fingerprints all over it. And he starts basically, he's trying to get away, he's trying to escape. Hackman is this horrific kind of sexually aggressive, toxic male, and he is so fucking intimidating in this film. There's a moment that eventually, like, Clint Eastwood sees him for what he is during one of these kind of speeches, because he brings the husband in and he's like, I love you, we'll look after you, we'll solve this murder, because they try and frame Luther for the murder, Clint Eastwood's character. And Clint Eastwood says, I'm not running from you, you fucking prick, basically, and starts basically blackmailing him and kind of leaving messages and stuff. And there's one point where he took the necklace from, he managed to steal the necklace from the woman who got murdered that night. And then he gives it to the aide. And then she's like, oh, it's a gift from you, Mr. President. And then you have this really intimidating, tense tango or dance sequence between the president and this woman. And she has no idea that Luther has sent it as a way to kind of fuck with the president. And he's having this really awkward, it looks beautiful. Like the dance is very, it's very stylized, but all the while you can see the two characters are like, Hackman wants to fucking kill her, or he's like, you realize this is the necklace she wore when she died. And this is during like a massive event. Like a massive event they're all going through. And he's very intimidating. And he gets like darker throughout, and he gets pushed and pushed into this corner, and he starts talking about like killing people and silence. And Clint Eastwood has a daughter played by Laura Linney, I think. And he's like, I've got to kill her. We're going to have to kill her. We have to silence her to silence him. Dennis Haybert, I believe it's Dennis Haybert in it. And I know he play a pretty good president in 24?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
So in this, he is like, he will do anything for the president in this. And he's like, I'll murder you. He's like trying to inject people with like window cleaner and shit, running people off the road. You know, he's like, he's American. He's like, president is American. It doesn't matter what he's done. I've got
a crazy Secret Service agent.
Yeah, he's great as well. Very cold and calculating. But yeah, it's quite a dark film. It's not a laugh a minute film. It's got Ed Harris in as a detective as well. He's great in it.
We do love a bit of Ed Harris.
We do. We certainly do. But yeah, it's really interesting to see this. He has this very friendly, Gene Hackman has this very friendly kind of facade, this kind of friendly political facade, but deep down underneath he's sexually aggressive. Apparently he's done this before to other women as well, like, you know, abused other women sexually. And the Secret Service agents say these noises are not unlike noises we've heard before, but obviously nothing like this has ever happened. So it's quite scary, and you can see him panic more and more throughout the film. But yeah, it's a really tightly packed, really tense kind of political thriller. I do recommend it. I really enjoyed it. It does share.
I've not watched it, to be fair.
Yeah, I think it'd be in your kind of part of your.
I love a bit of Gene Hackman. Ooh. I think Gene Hackman is brilliant. I can imagine just from the way you described it. I can imagine the type of performance he's giving, because he's very good at doing that. He's very good at showing something on his face, but then you can see something underneath in his eyes. He's brilliant at doing that.
Yeah,
he's the exterior when he's being quite nice and whatever. You can see something else underneath. That's the brilliance of Gene Hackman.
And in the film, he's not in it a lot. He's not in it that much. But when he is in it, you feel that menace and that intimidation and the power and the madness that he's got to cover this up. He could lose the presidency, he could lose his life, and it just gets, the tension ramps up more and more throughout the film. But it starts off, you know, and kind of continues throughout. But again, it's Clint Eastwood. He knows what he's doing behind the camera as well as in front of the camera.
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of also see this as kind of my secret President Lex movie. So President Lex Luthor movie, because Hackman was Lex Luthor. And he's president in this. And I kind of wish we'd had this kind of performance in his Superman movies. It might not necessarily fit, but I really... I don't like the Lex Luthor that's like a used car salesman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
like kind of cheesy. Yeah, cheesy, sleazy kind of thing. I'd prefer something like this, where he has absolute power. Wink, wink. He uses it in the worst possible way. It's got quite a... Hackman plays a very similar role in a film, 1987's No Way Out, with Kevin Costner. Plays a similar role. I think he's the Secretary of Defense or something like that. But check it out. It's really, really good. I really enjoyed this film. And yeah, if you're after something dark and political, this is the film for you.
Delightful.
Yeah, so that's
absolutely delightful.
That's my number five. Moving on to your number four, Andy.
Ah, my number four. You'll enjoy this one.
Yeah.
It is Senator Kelly. So he's always stuck with me as a character, Senator Kelly, because he's obviously in the very first X-Men film. He's briefly in X-Men 2 as well. Mystique's, you know, transformed herself into him to blend in. But what Senator Kelly does in the film is, you know, immediately set the tone for the franchise about mutants and them being ostracized from society and being feared. And it's very much a hardened political message in a very, very comic book film. But I just love the way, you know, that there's no holds barred with the character. He's only in it for a short while before he's tested on and transformed by Magneto and becomes a mutant. And he has that little bit of redemption, doesn't he, when he does, you know, melt away into water, where he's no longer afraid of mutants and he's, you know, he's a bit upset about the way he's tried to, you know, get laws passed on them and everything. But I think for the brief time that he's in there, that character sets the tone for the entirety of the franchise. You know, even going as far as into Logan and things like that, without the presence of Senator Kelly's character and, you know, the initial thoughts that he has, you wouldn't get any of the, you know, understanding from an audience about, you know, the fears, the political fears, and how that can be, you know, manipulated to achieve a goal.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's a very important character in the film. Like, I in the comics as well, like in Days of Futures Past, in the comic, they are going back in time to stop Senator Kelly's assassination, because he basically becomes a kind of a martyr for the anti-mutant cause. And that, you know, makes the Sentinels be made, and then they take over because they consider humans are mutants, mutants are human. Yeah. So that's why they take over and start policing everything and concentration camps and everything. And again, in the comic, he does have a kind of redemptive arc over time. He does change, even though there's, you know, he has various setbacks. Like, I think his wife is killed by mutants and various other things. And then he himself is assassinated, I think, by Mystique, I want to say. I think it's like Dream's End, I think the storyline was. But yeah, he's always been... I mean, you will always have these characters in the X-Men universe, which are basically just bigots and racists.
And that's what he is. He's just a complete and utter racist, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he doesn't even think about, like, the alternatives or any alternative solutions, you know, any peaceful solutions. It is very much a case of, well, we'll just try and get rid of them and put them in camps and all this, which does transfer into sort of like, you know, the character in the second film. I can't remember the bad guy's name. What's his name again?
William Stryker.
You get like the next evolutionary step in William Stryker. So you've got somebody who wants to initiate the change, and you've got somebody who's going to act on it.
Yeah.
So
in the comics, William Stryker's a lot more like a religious zealot. There's a famous panel of him pointing at Nightcrawler and saying, "You call that human?" You know, that sort of thing. So he's in a very similar mold. And I think that's probably was a good way to go with the sequel. I think that's an excellent choice. I think you're right. It's familiar enough to a kind of non-comic book reading audience that you can see that allegory and that kind of metaphor there. But again, that's what's great about the X-Men is you can use that allegory for anything. You can use, you know, communists could be the allegory for X-Men, you know, being racist towards people of color, you know, homophobic. You know, it works on so many levels and still does. You can always identify, like me as a young geek, you know, young, you know, bully geek, you know, I identify, I was the outsider, I, you know, and Senator Kelly is like, you know, we need rid of you people, we need rid of...
It's cemented by the opening sort of sequence, isn't it? Like with the concentration camp and everything that Eric Lencher goes through, Magneto, that is, for the uninitiated.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that whole idea, like, and you hear it all the way through the film as well, even after Senator Kelly's, you know, gone, you hear, so like, what are you going to do when they come for you in the night, Charles? What are you going to do when they come for your children? You know, Senator Kelly is sort of like the early rumblings of what you'd assumed maybe Germany went through, you know, prior to the rise of the, you know, the Nazi regime and things like that. It's that early rumblings, those early sort of like, you know, well, we need to do something about them. We can't have them doing this. We can't have mutants, you know, running schools and being headmasters and all of this. We can't have it. It's not right. You know, that for me, that's why he's sort of like he is such a pivotal character for me when I look at sort of like political characters. He's just a senator. He's not even a president at this point. He's just got very particular views that obviously other people are starting to go along with, hence why he gets into his senatorial position. But it's that for me that cements the character as something that I immediately think of. I mean, I thought of it before even a couple of my other, you know, top picks. Immediately when you said we're going to do one on politicians, it just popped in there. Senator Kelly, X-Men, immediately. And I remember it from the first time I watched the film. I wasn't really that clued up on the X-Men. I'd watched the animated series, but, you know, that was when I was a bit younger. But watching the very first X-Men film for the first time, I was like, wow, this is such a great character. And his changing sort of ideologies and...
Yeah, like
what he wants to do is really dramatic and really poignant as well.
And he's got a great arc in the film because, you know, he starts...
Yeah, even though it is really, really short.
Yeah, it's tiny, but the fact that... And again, like Magneto, all that Magneto is trying to do to him is make him a mutant. He's not trying to kill him. Like they say in the film, Magneto doesn't know his machine kills people. He's not seen the after effect that happens to Kelly. Because arguably, some people are like, oh, he's a mutant and stuff. And I'm like... Kind of, or is his body just like deteriorating now because of the...
I go with deterioration.
Yeah, I think
it turns into a jellyfish kind of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and then it just becomes pure water.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's slowly just congealing into that liquid form, and I think that very dramatically happens as well. And again, that's a great, lovely scene with Storm as well, where she's holding his hand and is like,
that scene works on so many levels. For multiple reasons, like political reasons, racial reasons, you know, societal reasons. It works on so many levels.
And it's like, you know, do you fear people like us? You know, there's nothing to fear. Mm. And she's like, I'm going to hold your hand, even though you've, you know, I've extended the olive branch, even though you are, even though I probably shouldn't, I'm going to do it because that's the message of the X-Men. That is the Charles Xavier dream, you know? And that's it. And I think Senator Kelly is a good kind of character to embody the message of the X-Men to a modern audience, to a movie audience, in one character arc. Simple, easy, done. And again, like you said, it sets the groundwork for those further sequels and for the treatment of mutants throughout the X-Men movie franchise. No matter which ones you like or don't like, it's always... relevant issue and always at the forefront of any of those X-Men movies. Excellent choice.
Of all the characters, just to finish off with that one, of all the characters that, you know, I hope the MCU bring into the fore, I hope they have Senator Kelly be one of them. I don't necessarily want, you know, all the major superpower players of the X-Men to come forward in a new film. I want to see some of these, you know, real human characters that struggle with the idea of mutants popping up. And I think Senator Kelly popping up in the MCU as like an offshoot of the Sokovia Accords would be brilliant. You know, we've got General Ross, then you've got Senator Kelly popping up in there, and then maybe Bolivar Trask as well. You know, if you want to take it a little bit further, you want to really explore that, then yeah, I think, you know, that would be the way that I want to go.
Yeah.
Leave Wolverine, you know, Yeah, maybe get Gambit in there, get Rogue in there proper, and Storm in there proper. But no, I want to see like a human, you know, a human that's seeing, like, first has seen Thor, Captain America, the Hulk, and now all these mutants popping up. I want to see that reaction. Yeah. I want to see somebody going, this is going too far.
And what I'd like to see as well is why is it okay for the Avengers and not for mutants? That's what I'd like to see. Like, why are we accepting of the Avengers and all that superhero lot, which are not that dissimilar from mutants, but now mutants are popping up. Why is this particular group not okay? I would like to see the difference between those two. That would be interesting. But excellent choice. Almost made my list as well. So great, great selection, sir. Great selection. So sticking with Marvel Comics, I'm going to pick my next one, which is Secretary of Defense, Del Rusk. Now, Del Rusk, yes. Not the computer. Don't worry, not the computer company.
Not Farley's Rusk.
No. So, believe it or not, back in the day, Geoff Johns used to write for Marvel Comics.
He certainly did.
And he wrote a run on the Avengers where the Avengers are recognized by the UN as a superpower, a world superpower. So they become separate from the United States. They have an Avengers embassy, if you will, instead of an Avengers mansion. So they become kind of almost like an isolationist nation, like Wakanda or something like that. And during this, the US government don't take too kindly to it. So Henry Peter Gyrick, who you might be familiar with from the X-Men cartoon, and Senator Kelly, who work quite closely with in that cartoon, is given to the Avengers as a UN ambassador and is blackmailed by Del Rusk, the Secretary of Defense, to give him information about the Avengers. Henry Peter Gyrick has a pretty antagonistic relationship with the Avengers. You know, he used to be their kind of liaison to the government. So he starts blackmailing it. And a short time later, in the comic book Avengers Red Zone, a massive red cloud of kind of this virus gas, not unlike the VX gas from The Rock, comes over Mount Rushmore. And it's this flesh-eating kind of bacterial virus thing. Everyone starts dying there. Skin's coming off. You know, it's all just red underneath. You know,
that sounds horrific.
It is utterly horrific. It's quite interesting. And the Avengers are trying their best to contain this, to contain it to the area, to try and find a cure as well. They've got Black Panther, Iron Man working on it. When they're investigating, they find a secret lab under Mount Rushmore, and they find out that the US government have developed this as a weapon. This isn't just any old thing. It's the US government. It's, you know, a domestic terror attack, basically. While searching through it, they found out that apparently the gas was meant initially to be created to affect people of color, not white people. So. Yeah, quite a serious one. They were trying to create a gas that would affect non-whites, but all the white people would be fine.
Yeah.
And this was all down to Del Rusk. So the Avengers throughout are trying to contain this, trying to cure people. They're struggling. They're doing more investigations. But then Henry Peter Gyrick gets kidnapped by Del Rusk and is being tortured because... Henry Peter Gyrick has not been giving Del Rusk any information. He's given him all false passwords and all this sort of stuff. It's all bullshit. So Del Rusk starts basically just interrogating him. Falcon flies in because he's been monitoring. He's known about this with Henry Peter Gyrick the whole time. So he's been monitoring him, watching him, trying to betray the Avengers. So they've kind of been working together. Comes in, smashes in. I think Iron Man pops in, Captain America pops in. Only for it to be revealed that Del Rusk is actually the Red Skull.
Of course.
So it should have been a bit of a giveaway with the racist gas that he makes, and also that he uses in the comics he's used a thing called the Dust of Death, which is this red kind of powder that sprays on people, and it turns their heads into a red skull and makes them choke to death, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's kind of a derivative of that kind of formula or something. Also, Del Rusk is an anagram of Red Skull.
probably
quite obvious.
Really should have seen that coming.
kind of. But it is, I think it's one of the more underrated kind of Avengers stories. And obviously, it's scary to think that, like, the Red Skull is always a great villain because he uses America's politics against it. Like, that's that's what he's good at doing. He twists the idea. He says, you know what, that's not a bad idea, but let me twist it. And, you know, he gave up being a Nazi. You know, he's like, Nazism is dead. There's no point. However, I think American politics and the way American politics is, I can use this as a weapon against the nation itself to crush America. You know, he's still a bit of a racist and stuff. He's not like, I'll be nice now. The protege of Hitler is never nice, you know. but yeah, I think it's a really cool story. Really cool story. Really fun. Great action pack towards the end. Great fight with the Red Skull. It comes down at the end to there's a punch out kind of knock down drag out fight with the Red Skull and the Black Panther, and it is great. It's seriously great. I won't spoil it, but Avengers Red Zone is a comic you should definitely look up. If you are interested, if you watch on Disney Plus, if you watch Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. In the second season, they adapt this storyline in a way. So the Red Skull is Del Rusk. He does turn as Del Rusk, and then the gas is released and stuff. But it's a slightly varied version of the tale, but it's still really, 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 really good. So if you don't want to read the comic, get on Disney Plus and watch the second series of Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. But yeah, that was my number four.
Lovely, lovely. Well, You've picked two extremely horrific characters there, haven't you?
I mean, we did say worst politicians, worst fictional politicians ever, and I think those two are pretty bad.
Yes, they are.
What's your number three?
My number three, which kind of adds to the sort of ultra, if you like, of, you know, where you're heading, is High Chancellor Adam Sutler from V for Vendetta.
Nice.
Now, I was not a fan of V for Vendetta the first time I saw it. It took me to actually read the graphic novel and then re-watch it a couple of times before I actually became, you know, quite appreciative of both, you know, the book and the film as well. But obviously, it's no shock which side of the, which side of the political spectrum High Chancellor Adam Sutler sits on, just by the High Chancellor moniker, if you like. It's very much ultra right wing. I can't say that very quickly. It's practically the embodiment of, so like, the idea of Hitler in the United Kingdom, if you like. It's very much all that. You see the podiums, the grandiosity of, you know, his political party and, you know, the militaristic development of the United Kingdom and the oppression on its people. And also, what do you call it? So like the oppression through media, propaganda and all that. You know, you see all that, and it's very, very, very similar. You know, what you saw in Nazi Germany and all that. Played by John Hurt in the film to a brilliant degree. It's just a horrible character, an absolute horrible character. And he gets his comeuppance in a delightful way, but without this character, you don't get sort of like the ideology of V and what he stands for. And yes, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it now. I do love the source material. I love the film. Like I said, it did take me quite a while to get into it. But, you know, this character is the literal embodiment of everything that you hope never comes to pass in whatever nation you live in, because it's just awful. And he's an awful person as well.
Yeah, it's scary because I remember when I watched it the first time, I was I enjoyed it because I'd read the book before it came out, and I wasn't. I do like the book, but I think in the middle it kind of loses its steam a lot. There's a lot of just
it's very long, isn't it?
If I remember rightly, the book was cancelled, and then DC bought the rights or took it over to the US because I think it was published in Warrior or another magazine like that. So it was kind of unfinished, and then I think you can see that in the kind of. And I like the artwork of David Lloyd, but it does get to a point in the book where I'm like, who is that? They all look a little too similar.
Yeah, they're all the same. Yeah.
And I'm just like, I got a bit lost, but I think the ending is strong and then the beginning is strong. But yeah, in the middle, I'm just like, oh, I just want to get past all this. It's just a lot of nothing happens, really, nothing exciting. And I think
it's all pondering, isn't it? Political pondering and political...
It gets to a point where it's a little bit wanky, I think, in terms of, you know, it's political, you know, what it's trying to say. It just becomes a little too ham-fisted, I think. But again, I think what they've done with the film, I think they've made, for me, just a great film. I think it's almost a required viewing every 5th of November. It's very rare I come out of a film now... I'm very rare I come out of a film feeling patriotic, not with Adam Sutler, but with V. Yeah. But just to clarify, I'm not. I'm definitely not patriotic for Adam Sutler and his messages, the exact opposite. You know, I think his political group's called like Norse Fire as well. Got all the black and red.
I can never remember what it's called. Yeah,
it's like black and red and white and all the lines, the crisscrossing of the lines. And I think the character wasn't called Sutler in the book. But I think they renamed him Sutler in the film to make him, you know, a little bit closer to Hitler. His name is a little bit closer. I think it was a stroke of genius as well, casting John Hurt, who was in 1984.
I was going to say, like, the allegories about, you know, the films that John Hurt's done in the past, you know, and the allegories about, you know, with modern politics, if you like. I think it's just brilliant getting John Hurt in there. To kind of say, you know, we warned you back then, you know, this graphic novel warned you, and we're still heading in that direction. So we're going to warn you again, if you like. I mean, the film paints it very black and white about where it sees political spectrum, you know, of the West, if you like. And obviously it's very much a statement on, you know, don't let it happen. We have to work together. Keep working together and all that kind of stuff.
Keep an eye on it. Don't let it slide. Don't let it slip. I think I was watching Bob Roberts' research for this, which is a great Tim Robbins movie, if you ever see it.
Yeah.
A guy kind of describes it as like, you know, you drop a frog into boiling water, it's going to scream. But if you slowly turn up the heat, you know, it's never going to notice until it's at that boiling point and dead. And I think that's politics a lot of the time. I think they're trying to, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of these kind of things, you know, like recently, like with the school dinners in the UK, you know, they're trying to not, you know, in the UK, we offer free school meals for kids in the morning because people struggle and parents can't get their kids on time because of various other things. They can't afford it. And we've recently, you know, they've voted against giving those meals out, which is, you know, it's a scary fact. I think they've finally overturned it recently.
Yeah, there was some very, very public sort of campaigning from a footballer, no less.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm not a massive fan of football or footballers, but fair play to him. He's a good egg.
Yeah, Marcus Rashford. Yeah,
that's the man. But yeah, I love this film, and I think I love the kind of, you know, it is like 1984 with him almost always on screen, somewhere safe. You know, it's very
there's
rare.
Always a political message over the speaker system, or, you know, through the national TV broadcasting system. You can't get away from him. He's literally everywhere, and it's very much sort of like a parallel to how you've seen it in, you know, communist societies and ultra-right wing societies.
Scary stuff. I remember recently where the BBC were looking to lessen any comedians making fun of the government or the current conservative government. The BBC were trying to like, oh, we're going to try and get away from this. I'm going to try and find some more right-wing comedians. And then I saw another article come out a few weeks later going, yeah, there's not many funny right-wing comedians. So I think we maybe not do that. But
that in itself, that sort of idea that you just said, that's literally in the film as well. Literally in the film, where basically there's a comedy show, Stephen Fry is in charge of this comedy show, and they make fun of Adam Sutler in it. And what happens immediately? He gets arrested and he gets, you know, purged, if you like.
Blacked, banged.
Yeah, you don't see him again, you know, apart from at the end when obviously he's probably long dead by that point. But you don't see him again. So the idea of saying, oh, we can't do, you know, don't make fun of the government, that is something that is literally ingrained in the film and ingrained in the graphic novel as well. The graphic novel was, when was it released? The 80s?
Yeah, Thatcherite, definitely. It was, you know, very, you know, a direct...
Yeah, a political commentary, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's the word.
Anti-political commentary. But yeah, those ideas were in place, you know, back then. Yeah, we do seem to be running the tightrope sometimes between, you know, what is fictional and what's possibly reality. And that's why, again, the film sort of stands out to me. The character sort of stands out to me as well, as just like the ultimate in horrible, evil politicians. You don't see him actively do anything horrible, but it's the knowledge of what he's done in the past, how he's led the country to the point that it is, and how he's manipulated the minds of the country. And in the film and in the graphic novel, you see people's opinions shift and change and morph as V sort of like, you know, gets more into them and says, you know, reopens their minds to the horrors that have been, you know, orchestrated by...
I was in a play version a few years back of V for Vendetta. I won't mention who put it together, just in case there's any legal issues with that. but I was hired.
It was unauthorized.
Unauthorized. But you know, who cares? Alan Moore hates all of these adaptations anyway. So
he does.
but I played. Who did I play? I played one of the politicians. Someone described me in a review as very Blair, and I was like, you know what? I'll have that. I'll take that. That's a good review for me.
That's scary in itself, isn't it? Like, you're in a theatrical production of V for Vendetta. You're playing a character that's ultra right wing. Still can't say it. Ultra right wing, and somebody, you know, suggests you come across like Tony Blair. That's a bit weird. That's dark.
Mm. Potential war criminal Tony Blair. There you are.
Move on.